It's time for the Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday morning at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. The views expressed at the Financial Cafe are those of the hosts and do not represent the views of Southern Illinois University Edwardsville, the SIU Board of Trustees, or WSIE Radio. Securities offered through Nickel Investors Corporation at No. 1 Executive Park, Granite City, Illinois, member FINRA and SIPC.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
If I had $1 million.
I'd be rich.
And now, welcome to the Financial Cafe and our hosts, Larry Lexo and John Graney.
Good morning, John Graney.
Good morning, Larry Lexo. How are you today?
Here we are again. I am outstanding. Today is Saturday, the 28th of April. Can you believe it?
Where did this month go?
Where did they all go? I have no idea.
Well, folks, welcome to the Financial Cafe. Grab your cup of coffee, sit back, relax, as you're going to hear some common sense financial information, hopefully. I'm still trying to get new studio here. Actually, not new, but we just got bumped. We know our place in this organization.
Yeah.
Can you guys move to the other studio?
Yeah, we got somebody scheduled here, so we're going to move you out.
But, yeah.
Oh, well, that's okay.
So it's a little different. A lot brighter in here.
It is. You know, we're in the program studio, so if we decide to go live, all I have to do is hit the right button.
Which has happened before.
Or the wrong button, whichever way you want to look at it. So that's the way it works. So it is the 28th of April, Saturday, and it is going to be, as the prognosticators of the weather have said, in the upper 70s or 80s today. Sunshine, and it is a grand day for a grand open house classic car exposition.
I like the segue there.
So on the line.
That was good.
Today is the day. If you are listening and you don't know what you want to do to get out and enjoy the sunshine, and you want to have a little fun looking at some really cool classic cars, classic trucks. Christy's going to have her 1968 truck, Ford F-100 sidestep pick-em-up truck there. And we're going to have some fire trucks there. And we're going to have...
Are they there because you're cooking?
They're going to be antique. No, they're going to be antique fire trucks. But we're going to have a street shut down. So it's at 2166 Pontoon Road in Granite City, Illinois. Should be a great day. Come out for the free fun food. We're going to have a giant blow-up slide, which will be a lot of fun for the kids. So noon to 4 this afternoon. I will be there. So be there or be square. If you have questions, you can give them a call at 618-876-1705. But I will see you there. So I hope you can join us.
Unfortunately, I will not be able to join you. I will be in
inside.
I know I'm going to be inside. Finally get a nice warm day, but I will be in Peoria attending the State Science Fair, the Illinois State Science Fair, as my daughter qualified for that. So we will be up there spending the day and missing the fun and festivities. But if anyone is there and catches Larry in the bounce house, please videotape it. And then send it to me at jgraney@nickelfinancial.com, as I would love to be able to hold that over my esteemed partner's head for future benefits.
He can try, but we will see what happens. But either way, it will be a lot of fun. Hope people come out and join us. And if you have a little more time after you visit the car show and whatnot, go by and see the Chef Shop. Last Saturday, they had a big deal with the green egg. They cooked up all kinds of neat stuff and shared with those who were there. I know Kathy Parks from our office was there with her husband, Rich, for quite a while. In fact, I think they sampled everything there was.
Well, good for them.
And they will be going back because there's going to be another green egg demonstration, bigger event here coming up in a few weeks. So go by and see Scott or Nancy Schneider over at the Chef Shop, 2320 Troy Road in Edwardsville. They do underwrite the show. And John, we're barreling in May, June. We got two more months. We're going to have a full going on 2 years on the radio. So about 100 shows, give or take. Can you believe
that? They
haven't
figured us out yet.
I know. We keep coming back. They do move us around the studios, but, you know, at least we have one left.
We're still in a studio.
We're still in a studio, so that's
and,
a good
and
start.
And your pass to get in still works.
It does, yeah. And the time that I swipe it and it says, uh-uh, then I think we're done.
Yeah. Or the day that the lights went out because someone turned them off as they were walking out and we thought they shut us down.
Yeah, well, there was that. It wasn't the FCC, fortunately. That's a plus. So we got lots to talk about today.
I have
John.
A lot. Yeah, I have a lot of just miscellaneous items here, but I know we wanted to wrap up our discussion from last week on vacationing because you wanted to cover your 27, was it?
27 underrated U.S. vacation spots that you should visit before you die, John.
And then as we talked about on the last show, we wanted to get revisit identity theft and scam. Things that go on just to kind of keep you informed of how serious an issue and wait, things that you can do to prevent it. So I'm guessing that this will probably carry over to next show as well. But
in the meantime,
as far as a market recap, looking at the quarterly returns, we just got the first quarter data in, and the only asset category that really had positive returns was growth. So anything with growth at the end, large cap growth, mid cap growth, small cap, international.
They were growing.
NASDAQ, the Morningstar technology sector was positive, but everything else for the first quarter was negative. The S&P was down 0.75%. The Dow Jones was down almost 2%. The Morningstar U.S. market was down a little over 0.5%. NASDAQ was up almost 2.6. So what does that mean to us? I still think, this, as we talked about last show, the earnings we were expecting would not be as great as the prognosticators were prognosticating. And we have
and
seen that. We've had
so
some
far.
Disappointments,
yeah,
I think, which has tempered the enthusiasm. We also had treasury yield going above 3% briefly.
Know. First time in how many years?
A lot of years. Yeah, several.
A whole bunch of years.
I had it right here. Up there it is.
Well, the irrational.
Loftiest since January 2014.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have to get over 3.047% to match back in July of 2011.
Wow.
So it's been a while.
It has been a while.
It's long overdue. I know the... You know, that kind of affects mortgage rates and, you know, it does have a bit of a drag. But at the same time, if we have a CD, at least now we can get paid a little bit more for it. If we have a money market, we can...
Won't quite get to inflation, but it's better than...
We're moving in the right direction.
0.01.
I can remember, you know, the days of earning 4% on a CD, and that was kind of, you know, scratch your head.
Mm-hmm.
No. So... I don't know. I still think this year will be positive. It may not be as positive as we had hoped, but we had a ridiculous good year last year.
Well, as I have heard it coined, and I agree, the irrational exuberance.
Oh, going back to Greenspan.
That was exhibited in 2017 when the market went up to 26,600 something, 52-week high. Is now at a little over 24,000.
Never happened.
But look at where we were just two or three years ago. I mean, we're still up. So, you know, huge gains over where it was. And I will
we're hovering around 18,000 on election night.
Yeah, it's amazing what has happened with the market. And it still does look positive. People are planning for and moving into retirement. And, you know, the interesting thing is still the first 2 to 5 years after you retire are probably the most critical in your life, because if you have a positive market and you're well positioned from an asset allocation standpoint, then you will be have a much higher opportunity to reach your goals over your lifetime. If the first 2 to 5 years are negative, can be catastrophic. It can be devastating in terms of your ability to fund retirement. So it's this next 2 to 5 years for those of you who are retiring. And John, I don't know what it is. People keep at least every week or every other week coming up to me going, well, when are you going to retire? I don't know. Do I look that old? Never mind. I can shut
your mouth. You're lucky I had the coffee cup right to my mouth.
He was about ready to drink, so I timed that perfectly. And I can't shut his mic off. So. But, you know, and as I tell them, I have a retirement plan. I have funding in place that I could retire today if
you're
I wanted
to. You're not allowed
to. But I don't want to. I don't need to. And I'm just having too much fun doing what we're doing. I mean, so we will continue on that line. And we met with a new vendor this past week. And we're looking, as we always do, for new opportunities for retirement plans, for helping people to become more retirement ready. Some of the new reports that we have access to are just kind of neat. So it's an ever-evolving industry. And it's something that, it's just fun. So why retire?
Okay. Well, we certainly don't want you to. We're having too much fun. Do you know who Bill Harris is?
Name's familiar.
He is the former CEO of PayPal and Intuit.
Oh, yeah.
And he got on our bandwagon. We said months ago that Bitcoin was, it's a scam. And his comment was, okay, I'll say it. Bitcoin is a scam. His reasonings for this are the fact that there really isn't a market for it, other than if you're a criminal. That type of cryptocurrency works really well.
Great for that.
He was talking about Silk Road and WannaCry ransomware. No one's really taking it, and as far as an investment, it's just way too volatile. And he's basically commented that be careful, it's gambling, it's a bubble, and he got on board with us. So we're ahead of a curve again, Larry.
Well, as usual, John, we are a leader of the pack.
We are, what's the word? We're something.
We are something.
I love how things come full circle. Several years ago, advisors wanted to collect their fees based on performance.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So they would have some benchmark, and they would say, okay, if we outperform this benchmark, we charge this. If we underperform, we charge essentially nothing. However, at that time, there was lots of calamity, and Congress still isn't on board with this, but this is making a comeback. This was in Financial Planning Magazine, April 2018. The article is called A Maligned Fee is Back, and some advisors are trying to use this as an alternative because of the fiduciary rule, potential fiduciary rule, not sure where that whole mess is going, as a way to collect fees for their service. They're saying that the typical, 1% for assets under management is not working, or they're just trying to figure out a way, I think, to make more money. So if you are talking to someone and they say that they are going to charge a fee based on the performance of the account, this is a little bit dangerous. If it's done right, I suppose it could work. However, what are they going to use for your benchmark? What are they going to do to outperform that benchmark? I mean, are they going to all of a sudden get crazy with some investing strategies and get a little bit more gambling per se to try and outperform so they can get paid? Because whether they make money or lose money, whether you make money or lose money on your account, the advisor still gets paid.
I think the biggest fallacy that I see in that is people are confused already about how their advisors get paid and what they get paid and from, what the basis. And you add this in with a variable compensation type of range. I think it overcomplicates. There's too many variables that can be factored in, as you said, the benchmark, beat this benchmark, but not that one. What are they getting paid for? I think it's just way too complicated. If you like your advisor, pay them a fair and reasonable amount of money, and it doesn't have to be a percentage of assets. You can pay them by the hour. You can pay them by the quarter, by the year. Okay, I'm going to meet with you 4 times a year, average 2-hour meeting. I charge $200 an hour. So there we go. And that probably is the fairest, because our time, like, an attorney's or an accountant's or anyone who is in a profession as such as we are, their time is valuable and they need to get paid for their knowledge and experience and their results. And it's, they're not, in this case, they're not going to be overly paid or underpaid. You get what you pay for, basically.
Oh, and I'm a fan. I like the assets under management. It's up to the advisor to determine how much they're going to charge. And, you know, we start out well below the 1%, and we work our way down to 0.25% after the account is over $1 million in assets. So it's a fair method. The a la carte, I don't know. I think that could be a difficult one to do, because let's say someone comes in and they say, I want you to look at my investments. Tell me if my investments are properly allocated. Well, you can't do that without doing a financial plan.
Right.
So you're going to end up doing all the work anyway for that one piece that you deliver. So how do you price that? The assets under management is a relationship model. It's, you know, long-term relationship. And at the same time, if the markets go up and your investments go up, you as the advisor make a little bit more money. If the markets go down and the investment value goes down, you make less money. So you're on the same side of the table, per se, with the client. So that's just my opinion.
Needless to say, there are different models out there. So
I'm not a fan of this performance base, because now you got to get into other. So now the client's going to have to know what a correlation coefficient is to determine that if the benchmark is a reasonable benchmark that they're going to how they measure their performance against.
Don't care.
You know, and it's hard enough to get people to understand just gross and net return, let alone. So I just think it's confusing. I'm not a fan of it, and hopefully it'll go away. And lastly, another fee issue is we are seeing what's called a lot of reverse churning. Churning is simply taking someone's account and buying and selling like crazy
for no good reason
to generate commissions. Mm-hmm. And it's called churning, and it's illegal.
And people have been sued for it.
Now we have this reverse churning, which is essentially broker dealers moving their clients out of mutual funds, typically A share class, and then moving them into a managed account fee-based asset under management charge. Mm-hmm. And they're calling it reverse churning. And we have a local brokerage firm wrapped up in that issue.
Which there are three major local firms.
So we'll just keep it that way. You got a 33% chance of guessing which one it is. Uh-huh. But that's a big deal. And it's unfortunate for those investors, because they paid, you know, a front load to get into those mutual funds, and now they're being pulled out of them and then put into something that is going to have a mutual fund expense and then a wrap fee put on top of it. And some of these wrap fees are outrageous.
Well, and that's one of the things I thought of earlier, John, is, you know, we talk about I don't know, there is really an average, but we talk about the fact that 1% as a management fee is not out of line. But I see accounts from several of the local brokerage companies, and they're charging 2% more for the same for management.
That's the number that I read in this article, which was shocking.
You know, which is outrageous. I mean, it's robbery, in my opinion. It's just theft, because they don't, you know, they have a lot of people who need to be paid, big buildings and advertising and, you know, an office on every other block and so forth, if you can't figure out who I'm talking about.
You're dying to say the name.
That's ridiculous, because, you know, we start at 1%. That is the maximum we will charge, and it's based on a fairly small account value, so we can, you know, justify our time. But as it goes up, then our fee goes down significantly, as John said, you know, sometimes to a quarter of 1% or less. So, you know, be aware of what you're paying for your management, and that you are indeed getting something for the management of your account, so that you know that it's right for you and you have some peace of mind going forward. And of course, a lot of these brokers who are now being named in the reverse churning suits, because there have been several suits filed already, are simply going back and saying, oh, but that's what the DOL fiduciary rule told us that we had to do. To some extent, I don't know if a judge will buy it or a jury, but to some extent, that's how they're justifying it. But the bottom line, it's hurting the client. It's hurting the you know, our client. And that's just, anytime it hurts a client, it's wrong. So they shouldn't have done it, shouldn't be doing it. And now I don't know what's going to happen to some of these clients that have already been moved, because to go back into mutual funds, unless the fund company is willing to bring them back at no front-end charge, I don't know. Time will tell.
It's a and you know, for the listeners out there that are trying to figure out what are we talking about by 1%, 0.25%. Let's say you earn 10%. Your investments earn 10%, and then you pay your advisor 1% fee. You net out to a 9% return on your investment. And if you think about it, if inflation is 4%, and then you're paying, as Larry was talked about, the some of these situations are north of 2%, that means your investments have to earn 7.5% just to break even with inflation and fees before you actually experience any type of real return on your investments. So as John Bogle from Vanguard says all the time, control the things you can, and fees is certainly one of them.
One of the few that you can actually control. So
on to some more fun topics.
I want to talk about vacation.
Okay. We both had vacations recently. Mine was in February. Larry's was in March. And now we want to have another vacation because we had so much fun.
I am ready for vacation. And of course, this afternoon is going to be kind of a mini vacation. You know, come join us.
There you go.
I'm back again at the Grand Open House, Maryland Most Lexo Insurance here in Granite. But it's a free event for everybody, community, friends, family, whoever, bring them out and enjoy. It's kind of a little mini vacation. You get some food. You get to get the kids good to go down a slide and look
just
at
seeing the cars. I love looking at classic cars.
Old cars are neat. The fire trucks are going to be neat. The actual old trucks are going to be neat. So it'd be a fun day. But anyway, there are, according to the BuzzFeed community, wherever that is, the BuzzFeed community listed 27 underrated U.S. vacation spots that everyone, in their opinion, should visit during their lifetime. They like to say before you die. I think during your lifetime is a much better way of saying it. But nevertheless, that's just me. And number one on the list is Sedona, Arizona. John, have you been to Sedona?
I have not. I've been to Phoenix. I've been to the major cities, but not Sedona.
Well, Sedona is a neat little community. It's, of course, it's in northern Arizona, known for the Grand Canyon. Couple hours south of there, and the scenery is amazing. The red sandstone, rock formations, great for hiking, biking, mountain climbing, all kinds of fun stuff. We've been there once, maybe twice, and we would like to go back. It's just kind of a fun place. You don't go, you know, it's not a Disney World type of thing. You go and do stuff other than if it's hiking, biking, and mountain climbing. So
any fishing?
But they do have some fishing. So, okay. You know, you'd be good. So,
all right.
Number two on the list is Mackinac Island in Michigan. So, staying with that theme.
I like Michigan.
Michigan is someplace I've flown through. I have never spent any time in Michigan.
You mean you've flown over?
Well, through, because I had to land there and get another plane.
Okay, so, you did go through.
Yeah,
okay.
I did go through. I was on the way to Bozeman, Montana. Don't ask.
Okay.
Yeah. But the Mackinac.
Is Bozeman on the list?
No, that's number 275.
Okay.
But as they say, the Mackinac Island in Michigan is an island full of fudge and no cars. So that's kind of fun.
That's right. I recognize the name of that because it's the new cars.
That's
where I got introduced to the walking taco, was in Michigan.
A walking taco.
You don't know what a walking taco is?
I don't know what a walking taco is.
Oh, okay. So you take your bag of Doritos,
yeah,
crumble them up, keep them in the bag, then you take your cheese, vegetables, sour cream, and dump your meat in there, mix it up, and then eat it out of the bag as you walk along.
Wow.
It works really well for camping, because all you have to do is, everything's cooked up, you just have to reheat the meat, and you're good to go.
And as long as you don't have a paper bag.
Yeah, that would be messy.
No vehicles are allowed by local ordinance. There are a lot of, there's a gigantic porch, they say, on the Grand Hotel, and has an amazing view of Lake Huron. So, you know, fishing. Lake Huron. Yeah, we're back to the fishing.
We're two for two so far.
Two for two. Denali National Park and Reserve in Alaska. I've been to Alaska. We did a cruise. We spent some time on the ground, so to speak.
Got to watch out for the bears there.
You have to. We saw several black bears who were probably closer than I would have liked. But, you know, it's 6 million, basically Denali, 6 million acres of wild land. It's got one road going through it. You have the wild animals, both large and small, because there is no fencing. And but a lot of tranquility, wilderness. You can camp there. You can fish. You can do all kinds of stuff. So
I'm noticing a theme so far with the, and I'm okay with it. I mean, especially in my younger days, I really liked backpacking and camping and so forth. But let's continue through the list. I'm wondering if any luxury type places
I
are going to be.
I suspect. Well, we'll run through a few more a little faster. Yeah, I suspect this BuzzFeed community may have been a younger group. it's kind of what I'm getting here. Pictured Rocks National Lakeshore, again, in Michigan. So sandstone cliffs on Lake, this is on Lake Superior. Great views, caves carved out of the land. Backpacking, yeah, there we go. 70, 75 during the summer. So Michigan's two out of four.
It's gorgeous. And
it's not bad.
Swimming in the lakes and crystal clear. And yeah, I really enjoy Michigan. Yeah, not sure about the winters.
I could do without that, definitely.
Unless you're going skiing.
We moved to, northern area, Glacier National Park in Montana, right on the Canadian border. They call it America's Switzerland. I wonder why they call it America's Switzerland.
Glaciers.
It's home to some of the most beautiful meadows, mountains, lakes that you've ever seen. Hikers will enjoy it. So they're Glacier National Park in Montana, then St. Augustine, Florida.
All right.
That came up recently. It's the oldest continuously occupied European settlement in the U.S. I didn't know that. And it's mostly architecture, weather, culture, food, sand beaches, landmarks. So that's kind of fun.
Was that where the Spanish guy landed?
Settled? Doesn't say that, but okay. I believe it, yeah.
Sure.
It was the, including the landmarks, the Castillo de San Marcos. That's not Spanish. So probably.
Okay.
The Outer Banks.
It's not French.
North Carolina. The Outer Banks. Not been there. Heard that. Big Sur, California. There you go.
Okay.
Again, with the hiking, mountain climbing, coastline, surfing, all that stuff. Southern Maine. Yeah. Southern Maine's a great go and visit.
Whale watching.
Vacation spot. Yeah. Rehoboth Beach, Delaware.
That is nice. I grew up on the East Coast. Yes, I've been there. Okay. That is very nice.
Well, I know close and dear to your heart, John, Philadelphia.
That's not on the list.
Is on the list.
It is.
Yeah. New York to the north, D.C. to the south. Summertime vacationers often overlook Philly, but it's a home to many historic places. True. Independence Hall, Declaration of Independence was signed.
Liberty Bell.
First Bank of the U.S., Liberty Bell, the cheesesteaks.
Oh, yeah.
Philly cheesesteak. That's where it gets it. Asheville, North Carolina. We're back on the East Coast again. Southern charm and hippie creativeness. Sounds like fun in and of itself.
Woodstock.
Yeah. Of course, that was in New York, wasn't it? Yeah, Woodstock's in New York.
Well, you said hippies. So
Northeast Gate. Well, that's true. Santa Barbara, California. Beaches, food. Yeah, good stuff. Falmouth, Massachusetts. Falmouth. Quaint New England town. Beaches. The Apostle Islands, Wisconsin. That's three for Wisconsin. Duluth, Minnesota, Gulf Shores, Alabama, been there. San Antonio, Texas, been there. That's kind of neat.
Austin didn't make it.
Riverwalk.
San Antonio is, but not Austin.
San Antonio, but not Austin. Yeah, Breckenridge, Colorado, been there. That's nice. Northeast Kingdom in Vermont. A lot of hiking, fishing, cycling stuff here.
Well, from an expense standpoint, especially if you're younger and you're physically fit and can take advantage, I can see why these would be the less common or less known vacation spots. They all sound beautiful, and I would have no problem going to any one of them.
Well, we have one in La Push, Washington State, secluded vacation spot, Pacific Northwest. So that's kind of that, and Virginia, Maryland, Wisconsin again, San Diego, like San Diego. The last three, John, of particular note to us, certainly the Ozarks.
Oh, yes.
The Ozarks. Stretching across southwestern Missouri, northern Arkansas, lots of outdoor stuff to do. We love that. Kansas City, Missouri made a list.
I like Kansas City.
I do too. Big enough to be exciting, small enough to feel homey. That's how I kind of describe St. Louis, but St. Louis didn't make the list.
No.
So Kansas City, Missouri, and last but not least on this list anyway, Chicago.
Chicago, as far as big cities go, is probably one of the better ones. I agree.
It is. It's
not in the wintertime.
Yeah. So there's 27 places if you haven't visited that obviously would be worth the time and effort to go and enjoy. So next vacation after the kids grow up,
John. Be a while.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. Whose fault is that? He's looking at me.
Stork.
Yeah.
So, okay.
Back to you.
Back to me. Well, thank you, Larry. And today we have, what we have now,
up,
what we want to talk about now is identity. What's that?
I said, up, time's up. No.
Up there. Click. Identity theft. It is a huge issue.
Very bad thing.
I forget how we ended up deciding that we should talk about this, what we were talking about last week when we said, you know what, let's go back and revisit this. But what I wanted to go over was identity theft types.
Mm-hmm.
Identity theft prevention, protection, recovery, and we'll start off with some statistics about just how prevalent identity theft is.
That's a little scary.
Oh, I have some other stuff. I'll talk about those next week. The big flood of Roth IRA conversions.
Yeah, I've seen that.
I'm getting there. I got too many notes.
Yeah. And I think we kind of got to cybersecurity and identity theft because in talking about planning for a vacation, we talked about visiting, using the internet and different sites for determining where you want to go and how accurate is the information really and how much of it is stacked by the people who own the hotels and motels and areas that you're going to. So what is the actual reliability of the information you're getting on the internet, and that can be questionable. And I think that's really kind of what led us to the cybersecurity. Is it really news or is it fake news, John?
Well, I'm trying to find the one article that I had that talked about this, but essentially we had a peak of identity theft. Oh, here it is. Identity theft in 2015 was the peak.
Mm-hmm.
And it's tapered off, but it's still pretty high. 2017, here we go. Ah, found it. I knew. Eventually, keep looking. Eventually, you'll find it. 2015, individuals impacted. And this is based off of a reliable survey, the Harris Poll. 2015, there were 13.1 individuals impacted. For $15.5 billion.
Wow.
2017, we're at 16.7 individuals and $16.8 billion, according to that poll. I was a victim of it.
Yeah, we were also.
So a couple ways that it happens. First one is financial identity theft. And
carelessness is one of the keys. Just not taking the basic common sense security measures, you know, shredding anything with your social security date of birth on it. Unfortunately, most all of that information is already out there due to the Equifax breach of what is it now, up to 300-400 million people. So it's not unusual for your name, address, social security, and date of birth to be out there. And that's all I need, John. That's all I need to set up an account for identity theft, taking out loans, taking out buying cars, vehicles, appliances, furniture, whatever. And once it's out there, you know, you're going to play heck. So one of the biggest things, you know, we've talked about, and I know I may be getting ahead of you a little bit, but be sure and check your credit score. You know, you can go out to the internet and pull up the freecreditreport, I believe it is, .com. And it's, it's annual credit report. Annualcreditreport.com. It allows you to print each of the three agencies, the Equifax, the Experian, and TransUnion credit reports. And you can do it once per year for free. And that allows you to monitor. If you do one every 4 months, you're getting almost a quarterly check on your credit. It's not going to give you a score, but it's going to give you a pretty good indication if there have been a new accounts opened or attempts on new accounts to be opened. And it takes a little discipline. The other thing, there are several credit cards. I think Discover was the first. And now I believe Bank of America may have jumped on the bandwagon. There's a couple others that they actually will give you your Fair Isaac, your FICO credit score monthly to show you where it's at. And, you know, watching mine, it'll go up and down 10 points just depending on, you know, the outstanding bills and what I'm charging, what I'm not. And, you know, we pay everything off, obviously, every month. But nevertheless, it'll go up and down a little. But if you see a significant change in it, then that's a huge red flag to start digging in.
So the most common types of identity theft, employment or tax-related fraud, which is what my wife and I were affected by, 34% of fraud is related to that.
Wow.
33% is credit card, which happened to me. I had someone in New York and Florida at the same time buying stuff in my credit card, but the bank contacted me. Mm-hmm. You know, so luckily that, you know, they provide that service. They contacted me. I said, no, I'm right here. You called me. And so they declined it and I got a new card. And
well, that happens at least once a year to me, John. And I don't know why or what it's indicative of, if anything, but at least once a year I'll get that call or get the text and email, because I have that those alerts set up on all pretty much every credit account I have that says, hey, there was just a purchase. In fact, it was kind of funny because on the one card I've got where I have no lower limit on the alert, and I'll go to the gas station and I'll be pumping gas, and before I get done pumping gas, I've got a text saying, someone just charged gas to your car. And I'm like, oh, okay, yeah, you're right. Me.
Yeah, unfortunately, mine was a whole bunch of tennis shoes. Someone really bought a whole lot of tennis shoes.
Mm-hmm. They were really needy.
Yeah, it's all about style. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's me. Phone or utilities fraud, 13%. Bank fraud, 12%. Someone else's personal information to take over an existing financial account or open a new account. That luckily has not happened. Loan or lease fraud. A borrower or lessee uses someone else's information to obtain the loan. Government documents or benefits fraud. The criminal uses stolen personal information to obtain government benefits, i.e. Social Security. So there's your list and the percentages. Excuse me. With credit card and, you know, all this identity stuff, a lot of it just comes down to some common sense. If someone asks you information and you, or provide you with, you know, you've won this and you didn't enter that drawing, don't open it. You know?
Exactly.
Or if someone calls and starts asking for personal information, hang up. I mean, just some common sense stuff, but unfortunately,
And one of the things that I find still confusing to consumers, John, in talking with them as clients and friends and family and whoever else, is debit cards versus credit cards. And a debit card basically is a substitute for a check because it accesses an account, a bank account, hopefully not your main one and not one with a lot of money in it, but it has a limit of, you know, whether it's $100, $200, $300, $500. And every time you use a debit card, it deducts it from the account. And if the money's not there, you can't spend it. And that's great, but unfortunately, you don't experience the same protections on a debit card that you do on a credit card, because if somebody steals your debit card information and drains your account of all the money, good luck getting it back, because the laws are not in your favor. If it is a credit card, somebody charges ill-gotten product that you didn't want, or another location internationally or whatever it happens
ill-gotten.
To be. Ill-gotten. Ill-gotten.
Are you a pirate
now? Ill-gotten. Ah, yeah. Hey, matey.
Ill-gotten booty.
Ill-gotten.
Loot.
And then, you know, then you can get a credit, which, as I said, that happens to me at least once a year, which is a real pain, because then they issue a new card and then any automatic payments or, you know, whatever, you got to change all that. But it's better than getting stuck with paying the bill.
Can you guess the top four states for identity theft? per 100,000 people. Complaints of identity theft per 100,000 people. The top four states. Mm-hmm.
California.
Nope.
Florida.
Yes. Got number three.
New York.
Nope. Right next to us.
Oh, Missouri?
Missouri. Number one.
Didn't know that. Wow.
And that's they traced the fraud that got my wife and I. They traced it to a group in Missouri.
Mm. Okay.
Missouri, Connecticut, Florida, and Maryland are the top four.
Well, Florida, I get because of all of the elders. But yeah, Connecticut. Wow. That's a little surprising. Missouri, you got a lot out state. So interesting.
Yeah. So, and then in 1998, they passed the Identity Theft and Assumption Deterrence Act. Penalties up to 15 years in prison, a fine up to $250,000. That was back in 1998. I don't think it's been any kind of deterrent.
Not that I've seen, certainly.
So, types of identity theft. We talked about financial. The medical. That's become a bigger issue. People are dumpster diving outside of doctor's offices and so forth. And this is why it's so key to shred everything. But medical identity theft, false medical, pharmaceutical bills, false health insurance claims, denial of health insurance claims. All these things can end up happening to you if you are a victim of that. But they start there because I think a lot of the protection that is available isn't necessarily being used by medical offices and hospitals and so forth. I don't think they really viewed that as a source for identity theft. But that's where people get a lot of your personal information. Blue Cross Blue Shield was hit. Blue Cross Blue Shield. Yeah. That was a big one.
That was huge. And several local hospitals, even in our immediate area, I know we were contacted by one of them not that long ago and basically said, if you have ever been a patient here between, and it was some time ago, but say 2000 and 2010, then it's likely that your identity was compromised and, you know, name, address, et cetera. And that's, you know, that's critical. And one of the things I was looking at in an article I saw, John, was the when you think about all of the technology that we have today, and to me it's a little over the edge as far as technology, but control of medical devices, pacemakers, different electronic devices that control an individual's ability to live can be hacked, and they have been hacked, and that is a huge problem. So there's a big push in Congress now for adopting, that's what we need, some more rules, for the medical device industry to adopt much stiffer standards to prevent hacking and people hacking into, pacemakers, defibrillators, that type of thing. That because the more implants we have, I know someone who has and it is, as I understand, a potential treatment for Parkinson's, where they have probes implanted in the brain and it's connected to something like a pacemaker and, you know, gives out impulses. And I can't even imagine, that being hacked and what damage it could do. So
I know on the insulin pump, they had some issues with people hacking into the radio frequency that the insulin pumps work off of, especially if you're on a continuous system. For example, and probably medical as far as probably the least reported type of identity theft. According to government statistics here, 250,000 people are a victim each year in the U.S. However, in 2008, the University of Utah Hospital announced that personal information of 2.2 million patients had been stolen. So what ends up happening is they get access to your personal information via your medical records and then turn around and open up a credit card
use it elsewhere.
A loan or whatever it may be and assume your identity that way.
And even old prescriptions or prescription bottles, they basically, many of them, they certainly have your name. They may or may not have your address. They have an RX number, a prescription number from the pharmacy. And there, you know, if you think about it, there's not a whole lot, unless it's a narcotic, there's not a whole lot of checking at the pharmacy that, because very innocently, you know, I can pick up a prescription for my daughter or my wife or mm-hmm. my mother when she was alive, mother-in-law. And
address and birth date.
Yeah. You know, well, when was she born? Oh, here's a date. Okay, here's stuff. You know, give me your money. So they can access a lot of information by doing that.
Yeah, and a lot of that stuff is, especially with social media now, is so readily available to get hold of. You know, I don't have a Facebook account, but I would never put my birth date or anything like that out there. But people do, you know.
They do, and even, you know.
Even on LinkedIn, I get, you know, oh, so-and-so's birthday. Well, that's one piece of identity theft that mm-hmm. is now out there for everyone to see.
Yeah, absolutely.
The address, you know, all of a sudden you got two or three. Social Security, a lot of times that last four is real easy to access. And so anyway, little things. Criminal identity theft. Now, this one would be scary, but this one is someone has assumed your identity and went on a criminal spree, and now all of a sudden you get pulled over for a taillight being out, and guess what?
Go to jail.
Can you have be freaky? Step out of the car, please.
Yep. Did not pass go. Did not collect $200.
So, and there are thousands and thousands of cases of this each year where someone has assumed the identity, went on to commit criminal acts, and now you have to try and get that cleared up. And that would be, I can't imagine.
That would be the worst. I think that would be, you know, especially if you...
I would not do well in jail.
...live a pretty decent life, and I don't think either one of us would, John.
I would not, nope. I would not, no.
That's a whole different world I want no part of.
I don't think I'm man enough to go to jail, so not willing to do the time.
Mm-hmm.
Children and identity theft. This is a big issue, because a lot of times... Until the child's 18, no one is even looking at their social security number to determine has it been compromised. As we talked about, I am a junior. Don't call me junior. And I had a credit. I had a credit card when I was 6 years old.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I went to clean up my.
Did you buy lollipops?
No, it was a company. It's not even Strawbridge and Clothier. I don't even know if you heard of that. That mm-hmm. was an East Coast, kind of like a. Macy's or whatever, mm-hmm. but it was on the East Coast, and my parents had a credit card, obviously, to that store, but it ended up on my credit report. My brother's car loan that my dad co-signed for ended up on my credit report. So I was just going through and viewing it. I'm like, why do I have all this stuff out there? Why do I have a credit card from 1974? I was only 6 years old.
I don't remember that.
Uh-huh. So that is, for those of you that have children, something you want to keep track of and watch, make sure their social security numbers haven't been compromised, because that's something someone can get away with for a long time before you even catch it. And then your child all of a sudden's trying to get all this cleaned up, and it's hard.
And every couple of years, it would not hurt to go out to that annualcreditreport.com and run a credit report or request a credit report for your kid under their SOCH. And if there is nothing, great. You know, you're probably okay. But if there is, then you better darn well check it out and get it done before it becomes an issue down the road.
Seniors and identity theft.
Big problem.
I'll let you talk about this.
Continuing one. Problem.
Since you're...
From experience, is that what you're saying?
Yet. I'm not a senior yet, so.
You're a junior.
I'm a junior. I will always be a junior.
Walked into that one. That was good.
As far as ages go, you,
well, seniors.
I don't qualify for the early bird specials yet on lunches, so.
It depends on what I'm wearing dinner. That day. It just, you know, sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. But yeah, seniors and identity theft. Unfortunately, I was, you know, witnessing a will yesterday, signing of a will for a client with an attorney that we work with, and sitting there with the couple who are retired in their mid to upper 60s, and both, you know, very cognizant and aware of what's going on, but they wanted to get everything documented. And we talked about the issue where if one or the other becomes impaired to the extent they can't make rational decisions, then the documents are now in place that the other can step in and take over, because that's pretty scary for retirees, anyone actually, who, whether it's dementia, Alzheimer's, anyone who's a senior who either becomes ill or for whatever reason can't make their own decisions. If the wrong person steps in and is making those decisions, then they can be devastated both financially and otherwise. And making sure that you have the right paperwork in place. There are a number of task forces out there. I know the Madison County Sheriff's Department has a seniors elder abuse task force, which has a lot of community leaders and other folks involved, so that if you know of someone at risk or you feel potentially they may be at risk, report it and let them check into it and make sure, because I have seen client situations where all of a sudden nieces, nephews, sons, daughters, you know, neighbors, whoever it happens to be, pops out of the woodwork and with stated good intentions of taking care of things, and it doesn't always turn out that way. So there are agencies, there are resources available that will assist in making sure that they are not abused.
So here they're giving an example of a 75-year-old who gets a phone call that she has won a lottery, and the call would go something like this. She tells you she doesn't have to send any money to cover the taxes. The caller said, just give me your Social Security number or give me the numbers along the bottom of one of your checks. And guess what? We will take care of filling out the tax form for you.
We'll deposit everything you're due.
And then the winnings would get deposited in your account as soon as this is taken care of, and we will take care of it for you. I think my dad is skeptical of everything, so I don't worry about
good
that.
For him.
But my mother, you know, she has the guilt, if you will, if someone called saying, you know, we have children that need food, or, you know, some sort of charity type that I think a thief could con my mom in that regard. I hope not, but I think if you're, you know, and I think that's the case with a lot of seniors, you know, that they have hopefully have done their planning, done financial plans, and have some cash, some disposable cash that they would be willing to help out a charity. And that's a con that a lot of people play to do that.
Well, they play upon their weakness and they play upon their needs, because a lot of seniors, if they've lost a partner, a lifelong partner of 40, 50, 60 plus years, and they're lonely, they're by themselves, and they don't have a lot of family around or available on a day-to-day basis because they work, and that's just a reality of life, is people, they get the phone call and they are lonely. So they answer the phone, and this, you know, individual on the other end, male, female, or otherwise, has a good story and wants to set an appointment to come out and talk with them. And, you know, we're just doing a survey, or we want to, you know, because, you know, with your years of experience, we want to see how you feel about certain consumer items or whatever. And in an effort just to visit with somebody, they'll let them come out. And it's very dangerous, number one, to let them in your house in the first place. And number two, to, you know, then they know where you live, they know your name, and they, you know, easily sneak in the, when were you born? You know, what year? Oh, are you in October? Or, you know, et cetera. And it's real easy for them to figure out way more information than you really should be giving them. So it's better to stay active, stay with your friends. If something like that comes up, call a family member. Call a neighbor, call someone you trust who can help you through that process.
And these guys, I mean, they're professionals. This is a profession for them, as notorious as it is. But, you know, they are good at what they do to make you feel comfortable and lure you in. And kind of the same issue applies with seniors as it does with children. More than likely, I mean, my parents never been, really? That's it? Wow. Okay. Well, we will be going into a second show for this, but my parents don't have a computer, so they're not. I know they're not checking their credit report.
Right.
So it can go on for a while, and then all of a sudden, some collection notices start showing up, and voila, you've just realized, and it's too late by that point, that you've been a victim of identity.
It really is.
And I also have found, maybe it's just unique to my house, but seniors don't like asking for help. That might be a broad brush, but I think, you know, they want to prove that they're independent, that they don't need the help and so forth, that they don't ask for the help. They don't want to be a bother. You know, you got a lot of things. My mom is, I don't want to bother you. You got a lot going on. My father is just the type that, you know, he can do it himself. And so, but that can be very dangerous. You know, ask for help. Say, hey, I got this phone call. Do you know anything about it? Luckily, my father-in-law, he got a notice that he needed to, he had some relative and had to get it taken care of, and that the law office was at this address. I went to Google Maps, put in that address. It was somewhere in Spain, and it was an apartment building.
Yeah.
So we pretty quickly determined that it was not a law office. So, and the last one on identity theft types is just Social Security identity theft. You know, get someone getting hold of your Social Security number, protect that with everything that you can. Next show, we'll get into ways of prevention, protection, what to do if you need to recover from identity theft. And we didn't give out any personal. So this is the Financial Cafe. If you enjoyed this show and want to listen to some other shows, go out to our website at thefinancialcafe.us. Everything is out there under podcasts, all of our previous shows, almost 2 years worth. If you have questions for Larry, it's llexo@nickelfinancial.com. If you have questions for me, jgraney@nickelfinancial.com. Again, this is The Financial Cafe, where we blend good coffee with common sense financial information.
A good cup of coffee starts every day right, John.
I've heard that.
Well, it's true. That's why you've heard.
And I live that.
Yeah, you do live that. I do too. So that's all right. But thanks for the chef shop. Go see if you don't know what a green egg is, you're missing the boat. So go by, see.
Go get them, eggheads.
Nancy and Scott and all the staff and everybody. They had a wonderful demonstration last Saturday. I know Kathy couldn't quit talking about it enough at our office.
The green egg.
The green egg. Yeah, she was there, and they have one, of course. And there's going to be an even bigger event coming down the road, so contact them at 618-659-9840 for more information on that. I think there are tickets available. They're free. There's no charge. But, you know, and we got to thank Scott and Nancy and everybody there for supporting us.
They've been with us from the beginning.
From the very beginning, the first shows, which will be 2 years come July 1. So it's been lots of fun, and we're looking forward to many more years of sharing some good basic common sense financial information to share with
you. Did we save the very first show that we ended up re-recording? Do you know if we saved that very first one?
You know, I will have to look. I don't know if I kept a file on that very first one or not. I know it's the only one that people ask me, do you edit the show? Do you change anything? I said, only once.
The very first show.
It was the very first show, and we got done, and we listened to a little of it, and we're like, yeah, we're doing that again. So
probably could have redone all of them, but that one was exceptionally poor. My fault, not Larry's fault. Larry has many years of experience with radio. I was a complete newbie and had a case of itis.
Bad case.
And then the program director here made fun of me, saying that I had a little bit of Willie Nelson, so I just completely lost any confidence that I had, which was small to begin with. And we redid that one.
Mm-hmm.
But yep. That would be fun to go back and listen to that one.
All right. I will double check later today, John, see if we have one. And if you consider that fun, then sure, we could do that.
It would be a laugh.
It will be a laugh. There's no question about it. So see everyone hopefully later today at the Open House Classic Car Exposition, 2166 Pontoon Road in Granite City, Illinois. Come celebrate. See the neat trucks and cars and fire trucks. You know, bring the kids. Then go down the inflatable slide and the obstacle course. Have some free food. Where else do you have, really free food, John? But we're going to have some brats, some hamburgers, chips. I have some water. We have my good buddy Kelly Cobb over at Culver's has agreed to give us a whole bunch of vanilla and chocolate custard, which we're going to pick up Saturday or this morning after the show. And so we'll be there all afternoon. Come by and see us nice and sunny, and enjoy the day. Have fun and whatever else you're doing.
Take pictures
there
for me.
And we will take pictures and we will share those. And we're pretty much on target here, John. So thank you for listening to The Financial Cafe on WSIE 88.7 FM, The Sound, on the beautiful campus of Southern Illinois University in Edwardsville. Join us again next week. Send your cards and letters. Steve indicated today he got a nice letter from someone indicating that they thought they said, and Steve told us, I told him I want a copy of that email, but he said that they thought this was the best show on the radio that they listen to every Saturday morning. So thank you for whoever that was that sent it in. We love hearing from you. If you have comments, questions, whatever, let us know. But again, the Financial Cafe continues in 7 days, 1 week. So have a great weekend, everybody. Say goodbye, John.
Goodbye, John.
You've been listening to The Financial Cafe, airing every Saturday at 9 a.m. on 88.7 WSIE The Sound. Today's show is underwritten by The Chef Shop in Edwardsville, your hometown kitchen accessory store, where a good cup of coffee starts every day right. Listeners are invited to send your questions regarding retirement, investments, or any other financial topic that may pique your interest. Send the questions to John at jgraney@nickelfinancial.com or to Larry at lexo@nickelfinancial.com. John and Larry will discuss those questions each week during their Q&A session. If you prefer, they will respond to you in private. Thanks for listening to The Financial Cafe on 88.7 WSIE The Sound.